Good morning, everyone. Last week we completed our reading and study of Book 2, Canto 4, Kingdoms of the Little Life, in which Sri Aurobindo showed us the first emergence of life in matter, first with very simple, unpromising looking creatures, but then the emergence of the animal creation. And then in the last section, about how in that animal creation, or to that animal creation, there comes a first beginning of physical mind, the body's mind, he says. So having seen all that about the what we could call the outer evolution of life forms and the way that the spirit is developing them, he moves on to see what are the Godheads, what are the immortal powers which are working behind this development. We're still in the little life, but it's as if he's going more below the surface to see what are the spirits, the beings who are there. So that's on page 151, Canto 5, The Godheads of the Little Life. And before we start our sentence-by-sentence study, I think we can read the first three sections. Up to page 163, or maybe even a bit further to page 167. Let's see how we go. Will you begin, Jean-Yves?
A fixed and narrow power with rigid forms. He saw the empire of the little life, an unhappy corner in eternity. It lived upon the margin of the ideal, protected by ignorance as in a shell. Then, hoping to learn the secret of this world, he peered across its scanty fringe of silence to disengage from its surface clear obscurity the force that moved it and the idea that made, imposing smallness on the infinite, the ruling spirit of its littleness, the divine law that gave it right to be, its claim on nature and its need in time. He plunged his gaze into the siege of mist that held this ill-lit straitened continent, rimmed with the skies and seas of ignorance, and kept it safe from truth and self and light. As when a searchlight stabs the night blind's breast, and dwellings and trees and figures of men appear, as if revealed to an eye in nothingness. All lurking things were torn out of their veils and held up in his vision's sun-wide blaze.
Thank you. Mihun.
A beauty, restless, uncouth, heartless, came in their dusky, unnoted thousands there. In a mist of secrecy, wrapping the world scene, the little deities of time neither act, who walk remote from heaven's controlling eye. Lucky, known to the preacher, whom they move, the small conspiracy of this petty rain, amused with the small country beans, the brief hope, and little eager steps and little ways. And the reptile wallowings in the dark and dust and the craft and ignominy of creeping life, a trepidant and a motley multitude, a strange pyramid of magic artisans, what is seen molding the plastic clay of life, an earthen brew, an elemental kind, astonished by the unaccustomed glow, as if immanent in the shadows, started up, limbs with the writhings and carved beast visages, spirit, sprite, characters, go being wise of a fairy world, and generally fairer but unsold and poor, and fallen beings their heavenly portion lost, and errant divinities trapped in time's dust, ignorant and dangerous, weak but armed with the power, half animal, half god, their mood, their shape.
Thank you. You like to read?
Out of the greenness of the dim background, the whispers come and immaculate force, a waking mind and echoing thought or one, or word, to their sting or impulse the vast section of all, and in that little nature do their work and fill its powers and creations with their ease. In seed of joy they curse with sour fruit, put out with error's breath its scanty lights, and turn its surface truth to falsehood's ends, its small emotions pour, its patience drive to the abyss or through the bog and mire, or else with the goad of hard cry lusts the prick, wild drugs and devious ways that nowhere lead, life's card finding no issue from ignorance, to sport with good and evil in their role, luring to failure and meaningless success, all models they corrupt, all measures make knowledge a poison, virtue a pattern dull, and lead the endless cycles of desires through sentences of sad or happy chance to inescapable fatality.
Thank you. Tunya.
All influence is an active bearer, nor there alone is there empire or there hold. Wherever our soulless minds and guideless lives, and in a small body self is all that counts. Wherever love and light and largeness lack, these corporate fashioners take up their task. All have conscious words, they extend their ring. Here too, these goblins drive our human hearts. Our nature's twilight is their lurking place. Here too, the dark and primitive heart obeys the veiled suggestions of a middle mind that dogs our knowledge with misleading light, and stands between us and the truth that saves. It speaks to us with the voices of the night. Our darkened lives to cut our darkness more. Our seekings listen to calamitous calls. A structure of unseen thoughts is built, and reason used by an irrational force.
Thank you. You like to read?
The earth is not alone our teacher and nurse. The powers of all the worlds have entrance here. In their own fields they follow the rhythm of love and cherish the safety of a settled type. On earth, out of their changeless orbit thrown, their love is kept lost, their fixed form of things. In a creative chaos, they are cast where all asks order but is driven by chance. Strangers to earth nature, they must learn earth's ways. Aliens or opposites, they must unite. They work and battle and they agree. These join, those part, all parts and joins anew, but never can we know and truly live till all have found their divine harmony. Our life's uncertain way winds circling on. Our mind's unquiet search asks always light till they have learned their secret in their source, in the light of the kindness and speechless moment. in the joy of the eternal soul and one, but now the light supreme is far away. Our conscious life obeys the inconscient laws, the ignorant purposes and blind desires. Our hearts are moved by an ambiguous force. Even our mind's conquests were a battered ground. A slowly changing order binds our will. This is our room until our souls are free. A mighty hand then rolls mind's firmaments back. Infinity takes up the finite's acts, and nature steps into the eternal light. Then only ends this dream of another life.
Thank you. Rita.
At the outset of this enigmatic world, which seems at once an enormous brute machine and a slow unmasking of the spirit in things, in this revolving chamber without walls, in which God sits impassive everywhere, as if unknown to himself and by us unseen, in a miracle of inconscient secrecy, yet is all here, his action and his will. In this whirl and sprawl through infinite vacancy, the spirit became matter and lay in the world, a body sleeping without sense or soul, a mass phenomenon of visible shapes, supported by the silence of the void, appeared in the eternal consciousness and seemed an outward and insensible world. There was none there to see and none to feel, only the miraculous inconscient, a subtle wizard skilled, was at its task, inventing ways for magical results, managing creation's marvelous device, marking mechanically dumbed wisdom's points, using the unthought inevitable idea. It did the works of God's intelligence, or wrought the will of some supreme unknown.
Thank you. Patricia?
Still, conscious was hidden in nature's womb. Unfelt was the bliss whose rapture dreamed the wounds. Being was an inert substance driven by force. At first was only an etheric space. Its huge vibration circled round and round, housing some unconceived initiative. Upheld by a supreme original breath, expansion and contraction's mystic act, creative touch and friction in the void, into abstract emptiness brought clash and cloud. Parent of an expanding universe in a matrix of disintegrating force, by spending it conserved an endless sun. On the hearth of space it kindled a viewless fire that, scattering worlds as one might scatter seeds, whirled out the luminous order of the stars. An ocean of electric energy formlessly formed its strange wave particles, constructing by their dance this solid skin, its lightness in the atom shut to rest. Masses were forged of faint and vivid shapes. Light flung the photon's swift revealing spark and showed the minuteness of its flash image. This cosmos of apparent things thus had been made this real impossible world, an obvious miracle or convincing show, or so it seems to man's audacious mind. Or so it seems to man's audacious mind, who sees his thought as the arbiter of truth, his personal vision as impersonal fact, as witnesses of an objective world, his every sense and his instrument's artifice.
Thank you, Narayan.
Thus must he work life's tangible riddle out in a doubtful light by error sees untruth and slowly part the visage and the veil, or else forlorn of faith in mind and sense is knowledge of right body of ignorance. He sees in all things daily his passion here, the unwelcome jest of a deceiving force, a parable of Maya and the mind. This vast perpetual motion taught and held in a mysterious and unchanging change of the persistent moment we call time, and ever renewing its recurrent beat, these mobile realms, the stereotype flux, these static objects in the cosmic dance that are but energies, self-repeating roles prolonged by the spirit of the brooding void, awaited life and sense and waking mind. A little the dreamer charged his pose of stone.
Changed. Little the dreamer changed his pose of stone. Thank you. Evelyn?
The strength of life that could not try or move, yet broke into unity, singing the song we divide. Inarticulate sensibility drops off the heart of a new word, render its somnolent floor in their store, a vague uncertain will, a wandering closingness of secret eyes. In fact, soft feeling grew and birth was born. A godhead woke, but lived with dreaming wings. Her heart refused to open its sealed doors. In something to our eyes that only is seen, the form, the act, and not the imprisoned part. Life hid in her purse, offered a course in color, a consciousness with new stipends, a mind suppressed
Thank you.
At first, she raised no voice, no motion there, charged with the word of power, instinctively living force. Only she clung with the power, rose to the safeguards, drilled down to the shocks of rain and leaves, and put out tender fingers of desire. The strength in her yearning for sun and night, felt not the embrace that made her rest and sleep. Also, she dreamed and had beauty and truth. At last, the charmed immensity looked forth, restored, vibrant, hungering, she groped for mind. Then slowly sense, fever, and thought peered out. She forced the reluctant bold to go away. The magic was chiseled in her conscious form. Its transient vibrations rhythm a quick response, and luminous story prompted brain and nerve awoke in the matrix's identity. And the body with the ear of the heart's love and the soul's within space.
Thank you. Will you read?
The heart's love and the soul's witness is of the heart's love and the soul's witness is. Impelled by an unseen will there for break out, but means of some past impulse internal, and if it glimpses of a secret self, and the doubtful seed and force of state spirit. However, in the inconscient food of feet and animal vision, and even curled between the heart and the sky, entered by faith, the potent steel to me, and glad to breathe it only for a while. And black to bless is only for a while. Then man was molded from the personal growth. Then man was molded from the personal growth. The thinking mind has come to live life's moves. The me is true of a nature makes and makes. And intelligence half business, half nation.
Thank you. Thank you. Lauren.
The seeming driver of her will of work's mission to motive and rhetoric her grasp of grip and fixed its law on her inconstant power. This matter screen of a delicate engineering aspired to enlighten its user and refine, lifting to a vision of the indwelling power. The absorbed mechanic's crude initiative, he raised his eyes, heaven night mirrored a face, amazed at the works wrought in her mystic sleep. She looked upon the world that she had made, wondering now sees the great automation. She paused to understand herself and aim. Pondering, she learned to act by consciousness. A vision measure guided her rhythmic steps. Thought bordered her instincts with a frame of will, and lit with the idea her blinded urge. On her massed impulses, her reflex acts. On the unconscious push or guided will and myth and mystery of unthinking, accurate steps, she struck the specious image of herself, a living idol of disfigured spirit. On matter's acts, she imposes a pattern law. She made a thinking body from chemical cells. and molded a being out of her to be what she was not in flame, her hope. She turned to greenward some eye unknown. A breath was felt from the mouth of one supreme.
Thank you. Sebastian.
An opening looked up to the spheres above, in colored shadows, lined in mortal bronze. The passing figures of immortal things. A quick celestial flesh would sometimes come. The illumined soul ray fell on heart and flesh, and touched the semblances of ideal life, the stuff of which our earthly dreams are made. A fragile human love that could not last. Ego's month wings to lift the sphere of soul appeared the surface glamour of brief day, extinguished by a scant breath of time. Joy that forgot mortality for a while came, a rare visitor who left behind and made all things seem beautiful for an hour. Hopes that soon fade to dread realities, and passions that crumble to ashes while they blaze, kindle the common earth with their new flame.
Thank you. So, Dania.
A creature insignificant and small, visited, unlifted by an unknown form. Man leveled on his little patch of art, convinced to lust to endure, not undone. A spirit that perished not in the body and death was there, like a shadow of the unknownness, and stood behind the little personal form, but claimed not yet his earthly embodiment. Ascending to nature's long, slow, wooden drive, watching the works of his own ignorance, unknown, unfelt, the mighty weakness moves, and nothing shows the glory that is here. A wisdom born in the mystic world, a silence listening to the cry of life, it sees the herring crowd of lemon stream towards the still redness of a distant hour.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ganga Lakshmi?
Sorry, but maybe not.
Maybe not, Tuan?
Maybe. It's better.
This huge world unintelligibly turns in the shadow of used unconscious. It hides a key to image mist. It locks in our hearts a voice we cannot hear. An enigmatic labor of a spirit. An exact machine of which none knows the use. An art and ingenuity without sense. This minute, elaborate, orchestrated life forever plays its motiveless symphonies. The mind learns and knows not, turning its back to truth. It studies surface bonds by surface thought. Life steps, surveys, and nature process sees, not seeing for what she acts or why we live. It marks her timeless care or just device, her patient intricacy or fine detail, the ingenious spirit's brave inventive plan, in her great future mass of endless words, adds purposeful figures to her purposeless sun, its gabbets, story spines, its climbing roofs, on the close calm foundations she has laid. Imagined citadels reared in mythic air, or mounds a stair of dream to a mystic moon. Transient creations point and hit the sky. The world conjecture scheme is labored out on the dim floor of mind's incertitude, or painfully built a fragmentary hope.
Thank you, Karen.
Impenetrable, the mystery, recondite.
Recondite, yes.
Is the vast plan of which we are a part. Its harmonies are discourse to our view, because we know not the great things in inscrutable works, the cosmic agencies. Only the fringe of a wide surge, our instruments have not that laser light. Our will tunes not with the eternal will. Our heart's sight is too blind and passionate. Impotent to share in nature's mystic fact, inapt to feel the pulse and core of things, our reason cannot sound life's mighty sea, and only counts its waves and scans its form. It knows not whence these motions touch and pass. It sees not whither sweeps the hurrying flood. Only it strives to canalize its powers and hopes to turn its course to human ends, that all its means come from the inconscient store. Unseen, here acts dim, huge world energies, and only trickles and currents are our share. Our mind lives. Our mind lives far off from the authentic light, catching at little fragments of truth in a small corner of infinity.
Thank you. That's when oceans fall. Yes, sorry, I anticipated you. Manoha.
Our conscious movements have sealed origins, but with those shallow seeds, no converse grows. No understanding binds our comrade parts. Our acts emerge from a grid, our minds approach. Our deepest depths are ignorant of themselves. Even our body is a mystery shop. As our heart's roots lurk, screened below our heart, so lie unseen our roots of mind and heart. Our springs are kept close, deep beneath, within. Our souls are moved by powers behind the worlds. In the subterranean reaches of the spirits, a quiescence acts and lacks not what it means. Using unthinking monitors and scribes, it is the cause of what we think and feel. The troglodytes of the subconscious mind, ill-trained, slow, stammering interpreters, only of their small
tasks,
routine aware, and busy with records in ourselves. Concealed in the subliminal secrecies, meet an obscure occult machinery, capture mystic Morse whose measured will transmits the messages of the cosmic force. A whisper falls into life's inner ear and echoes from the dark subconscious caves. Speech leaps, thought quivers, the heart vibrates, the will answers and tissue and nerve obey the will. Our lives translate these subtle intimacies. All is the commerce of a secret power.
Thank you. Jerry.
The thinking puppet is the mind of life. Its choice is the work of the mental strength that know not their own birth and end the pulse, and glimpse not the immense intent of this journey. In this nether life of man, rebuilt and done, yet the portent and small, ignoble things, the conscious ball is pushed 100 ways, and feels the push, but not the hands that ripe. For none can see the masked ironic truth through whom our figure cells and memories, our deeds and unwitting movements in their grasp, our passions strive and entertainments siege, ignorant themselves of their own fount of strength, they play their part in an enormous hope. Agents of darkness, intimating light, spirits obscure and moving things obscure, unwillingly they serve a mighty power. Anarchists, engines organizing chance, channels perverse of stupendous will, tools of the unknown who use us as their tools, invested with power in nature's nether state, into the actions mortals think their own. They bring incoherences of fate, make a doom of time's shipshots, caprice, and toss the lives of men from hand to hand in an inconsequent and devious game.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Patty.
It's all higher truth, their stuff rebellious. Only to tighten force, their will lies prone. Inordinate, their hold on human hearts. In all our nature's turns, they intervene. Insignificant architects of low-built lives and engineers of interest and desire. Out of crude earthiness and muddy thrills and coarse reactions of material nerve, they build our huddled structures of self-will and the ill-lighted mansions of our thought. Or the ego's factories and marts surround the beautiful temple of the soul. Artists minute of the hues of littleness, they set the mosaic of our comedy, or plan the trivial tragedy of our days, arrange the need, combine the circumstance, and the fantasia of the mood's costume. These unwise prompters of man's ignorant heart, and tutors of his stubborn speech and will, movers of petty wraths and lusts and hates, and changeful thoughts and shallow emotion starts. These slight illusion makers with their masks, painters of the decor of a dull-hued stage, and minimal scene shifters of the human play, ever are busy with this ill-lit scene. Ourselves incapable to build our fate, only as actors speak and strut our parts until the piece is done and we pass off into a brighter time and subtler space. Thus they inflict their little pygmy law and curb the mounting slow uprise of man. Then his too scanty walk to death they close.
Perhaps we'll pause there and go back to the beginning. Look more closely at what we have read. Page 151, Varadarajan, what do you read? Page 151, Canto 5, The Godheads of the Little Life. Thank you. So this he, of course, is King Aswapati. At the end of the previous canto, he was seeing, perhaps looking back at this kingdoms of the little life that he had seen, he saw on the previous page, on page 150, line 665, he saw the whole of existence, the whole world stare, like a bridge spanning
the inconscient gulfs of the material universe, a half-illumined building in a mist. He sees it dimly, no? Half-lit, surrounded by mist. He sees it rising up from a void of form, an emptiness in which there's no form, and rising up into another emptiness, an emptiness of soul. And in that picture, he sees life, a little light in a great darkness born. Life knew not where it went, nor whence it came. Around all floated still the nescient haze. So it just continues. No? That picture continues. He sees this empire of the little life, a fixed and narrow power with rigid forms, the empire of the little life, an unhappy corner in eternity. It's living there on the margin, on the edge of the great creative idea of the universe. No? And that little unhappy corner is protected as if by a shell of ignorance. But Aswapati wants to know more. He wants to know the secret of this world. And so it seems as if around it there's a kind of fringe, a scanty fringe, a narrow, limited fringe of sight. There's a possibility of seeing something. So he peers across that, trying to disengage, to make out from that surface clear obscurity, that mist and haze and dimness, which is clear only on the surface. What he wants to find is the force that is moving that world and the idea that has made it. No? That force, that creative force, and that idea, that creative concept that has given rise to this unhappy corner of eternity has somehow imposed smallness on the infinite, on all of infinite possibility. It has made this little corner. No? So he wants to know, what is the ruling spirit of that littleness? No? What is the divine law that has given this little unhappy corner its right to be? What is its claim on nature and its need in time? There would have to be a need and a purpose, otherwise it couldn't exist. No? That's what he wants to find out. He's seen the emergence of these forms and tendencies in the material world, but why? What is behind? That's what perhaps will be explored in this canto. Marie-Ange?
It burns to gaze into the seeds of mist that held this ill-lived segment in second thing, linked with the skies and seas of ignorance, and kept itself for truth and self and light. As when a searchlight stabs the night's blind rest, and dwellings of entries and figures of men appear, as if revealed one eye of nothingness, all lurking things were torn out of their webs and held up in his vision-sun-white place, a busy, restless, uncouth populace.
Uncouth.
Uncouth populace, teemed in their rusty, unnoted thousand there.
Right, thank you. So this morning I put out the picture, the painting. It is on the table up there, another sketch of that was corresponds to this passage. No, the searchlight, Aswapati's vision, piercing through the darkness like a searchlight, piercing through the night. Perhaps we've experienced something like this, that you're in complete darkness and then a searchlight is switched on. It's a beam in the darkness, and whatever's in the line of that beam, you see. I remember when I was a teenager, we used to drive to my grandmother's house after school on Fridays, and then the headlights of the car would light up the darkness as we went. So there was like a tunnel of light, and all kinds of things appeared there. So Shobin, Aswapati doesn't have a searchlight or a torch. He has a power of vision that can pierce through that darkness. And when he does that, then all these lurking things that are hiding in the darkness, they're torn out of their veils. Their veils are removed and held up in his vision's sun-white blaze. They can be seen clearly, all those hidden things that are lurking there. And he sees that it's quite an active scene, a busy, restless populace, and they are uncouth. They are a bit rough and uneducated and unrefined. And there are thousands of them, teamed in their dusky, unnoted thousands there. They are not noticed because they are so dark and unobtrusive in the darkness. That's what he sees, all these little beings rushing about. Yes.
Straightened.
It means that it's confined. A strait, you know, is a narrow bit of sea between land, something that's straightened. It's restricted in its movement. So that continent, there's not much lighting it up, and it's narrow. It's just a little corner, this unhappy corner in eternity.
It's beside the point, but English is such a funny language there. O-U-T, and then like mouth and the spelling I'm talking about in the pronunciation of uncouth.
Uncouth, yes. Sorry, I apologize for English spelling. There's nothing to be done about it. One can only apologize. Nothing to be done about it. Yes. Should be uncouth, but it isn't. It's uncouth. So sorry. But that's one of the nice things about reading Sri Aurobindo, no, that we can come across all these strangenesses of English. So who's next? Don?
And I like this irony. It's ignorance is shielding from light and...
Yes, protecting. It's protective. Yes. Right.
It's irony. In a mist?
No, in a mist, yes, in a mist of secrecy.
In a mist of secrecy wrapping the world scene, the little deity of time's nether act, who worked remote from heaven's controlling eye, plotted, unknown to the creatures whom they moved, the small conspiracies of this petty reign. Amused with the small contrivings, the brief hopes, and little eager steps and little ways, and reptile wallowings in the dark and dust on the air, and the crouch and ignominy of creeping life, a crepitant and motley multitude, a strange pell-mell of magic artisans, the scene molding the plastic clay of life, an elfin brood, an elemental kind.
Thank you. So these are the little deities of time's nether act. What's going on in the lower levels in time? And they are operating in this mist of secrecy. They can't be seen in the mist and in the darkness. These little deities, they're deities because in a way they're immortal. They're not mortal beings, but they're They are not great gods either. They are just little mischievous deities. And they're working very, very far away from where heaven can see them, where the higher powers can keep an eye on them.
Aren't they like the elves in the forest?
Yeah, somewhere he says elves and fairies and elfin brood, he says it here. Yes. Nether means lower. So what is happening in time? What actions are going on in time on the lower levels of things, in the little life that we are mostly not aware of? I think that's the point that he makes again and again in this canto. These little beings are doing their work there, and we are not aware of them at all. They are plotting. They're plotting. They're having fun plotting things. They're quite unknown to the creatures whom they move. They are moving us, actually, and moving all living creatures.
The elementals have no psychic being, do they? They're immortal.
I suppose that's so, yes. I don't know, really. Yes, well, it's somehow protected, isn't it? There's this shield of ignorance and darkness, and that is allowing it to exist. Of course, from the supreme heights, the one must be seeing all this and must be sanctioning all this, otherwise it wouldn't be happening. But yes, Patricia, you've something to come with. He's asked whether this is the realm where death originates. I think death is there already. As soon as there's life, there's death. I should say, as soon as there's material life, then there's death. And here we are in a subtle world, and that's why these little creatures can be deities. They can be not subject to death. They can be immortal. So what they indulge in, what they're amused with, is their small contrivings, the little... I think that occultists and magicians, they make use of these small beings to get their mischief done. If somebody studies black magic, it's these kind of little elemental entities that they can make use of. And of course, Mother was able to control them with her heaven's controlling eye. She could deal with them. But if we are not conscious, if we are not aware of them, then they do their mischief with us.
Would Mother not use them to remind her when the milk was boiling over?
She said these were nice beings. They were also elemental entities, but they were nice beings who were being helpful. But sometimes there were other ones who were just doing their mischief and didn't care whether they were being helpful or not. Yes, she said, it's so nice they come and tug at my sari to tell me the milk is about to boil. Nice. I'm not hearing you very well, Lorraine. Yes. Yeah, of course they appear in fairy stories. That knowledge is there about these creatures. We can imagine them. Perhaps we meet them in dreams. So what they're engaged in, their small contrivings, their brief hopes, their little eager steps and little ways, and their reptile wallowings in the dark and dust, and the crouch and ignominy of creeping life. Ignominy. It's the opposite of nobility. Somewhere in the poem he speaks about the ignominy of mortal life, for the soul to have to be born as a human being. It gives ignominy. It is. Somewhere he speaks of that. They're trepidant. They're fearful and motley, all different shapes and sizes and colors.
Another word
you're nice. Oh, motley. Yeah. Motley, it's this costume which Harlequin wears. Harlequin wears with the patches of the motley mixed up. Mixed. A strange pell-mell of magic artisans. We had this pell-mell recently before, didn't we? In a rush. All these motley people are rushing mixed up in a jumbled up crowd, coming and going. These are artisans. They're craftsmen, little craftsmen. They're seen molding the plastic clay of life. They can do all kinds of things. He calls them an elfin brood, suggests something small and fairy-like. An elemental kind. Yes, they're connected somehow with the elements. Perhaps this is a word that the Theosophists used for these little beings.
Why would they be trepidant? They are immortal and can do whatever in their little ways. So what are they afraid of?
I think the word here is suggesting the way that they're rushing about and hiding. And have you got trepidant there?
Yeah.
What does Rand his? What does Rand his Hicks? Fearful. Trembling. Yeah.
I'm wondering what is the force which is making them fearful?
Existence.
They're all at the same time. The monkey and the dog, and
they don't know who they are, they don't know why they exist, but they exist as described here.
In French, trepidant is more like a machine which is.
Moving, it's the movement. That's what it's suggesting to me. It's that feverish movement.
Yeah. It's another word for
yeah, and starting something and dropping it and moving it onto something else. Brood. It means a kind, a species, a family. A kind or species or family. A brood, it's connected again with this word broody, with the mother hen sitting on her eggs. And what will hatch out, it's the brood, it's all the little ones that come out. So I think that's where we stopped. Huh? Will you read? Yes.
Astonished by the unaccustomed glow, as if imminent in the shadows started up, imps with riot limbs and carved beast visage, striped prompters, goblin wizard, or fairy small, and genie, fair but unsold and poor, and fallen beings, their heavenly portioners, and errant divinities, transgressors, ignorant and dangerous, wills but armed with power, are God, then move their ship.
Thank you. So they're astonished by the unaccustomed glow, that searchlight beam of Aswapati's vision. I've lost my place too. Yes, I'm sorry. I've got myself into the wrong canto here. So when that unaccustomed glow comes, they start up. They suddenly appear out of the shadows, as if they were part of the shadows until the light came. Immanent means dwelling within. So they're all different forms, imps, mischievous little spirits with wry, twisted limbs and carved beast visages, these strange contorted faces that we see carved on the gutters of cathedrals, you know, of animals, but there may be monsters also, not familiar animals. You know on those gargoyles, what strange faces, it's something like that.
I think European Gothic churches are just full of
these. Yes, yeah. And then he says, sprite prompters, little almost invisible things that come and whisper suggestions in your ear. And they are either wizened, also twisted and distorted faces, and ugly like goblins, or they may be just pretty little things like fairies. Or they may be genii. These are the jinns of the Arabian nights. No? They are spirits who are actually in their origin, they're supposed to be very close to human beings. They're connected to us. They are the children of our father Adam by his first wife, Lilith, who must have been a vital spirit. No? So they are unsouled, he says here. They don't have psychic beings and poor. But they are more beautiful. Therefore, they can appear more beautiful, more than these wizened goblins and imps and so on. And there are fallen beings there who have had psychic beings, who have lost their heavenly portion, who got lost. And even divinities, divine beings, who have got lost, who are wandering, trapped in time's dust. They are the ones who are found there in that world of little life. And perhaps these are the ones that Savitri encounters when she first enters in to her bodily being in search of the soul. She comes across beings who are something like this. And he says they are ignorant and dangerous wills. They have wills and they do have power. Half animal, half God, their mood and their shape, in their forms and in their nature.
So what would be our appropriate relationship?
I take great care.
Can I see them as dark forces anyway?
At least they are small dark forces, yes. And he will tell us what kind of mischief they do. They use us as their puppets. We read that. No, Jerry read that part. They manipulate us if we are unaware of their existence and their action and influence in us.
There's a place in Scotland that made a relationship with these elementals who looked after plants, and they were able to grow plants which were huge as a result.
Yes.
Very good crops.
Yes. So that's one of that's if you have their goodwill, they can do all kinds of useful things for you. No? Yes, Don.
In the wonderful play of Shakespeare, Midsummer Night's Dream,
I think Ariel is in The Tempest, if I'm not wrong.
No, I'm sorry, that's my mistake. No.
Very useful.
Very useful.
Because he's controlled by the magician. He's not willingly useful. Ariel is useful because he's forced to be useful. Yeah. And finally, Prospero sets him free.
Can you explain this? Unsold? Why is he calling them unsold?
He's saying they do.
Every
human being is supposed to have a soul, but these are spirits. These are
non-living matter, like metal also has consciousness. Is it different from unsoul?
Here he's saying they don't have souls. These particular beings, these genii, they don't have souls, he says.
They lost their souls or they never had them?
Here it says that the genii don't have souls. But then there are also some fallen beings who have lost their souls.
Yeah,
they have lost their heavenly portion. And then there are even divinities, errant divinities, who have got lost and are trapped. So it's really not a very pleasant area.
There's the play and the book, The Portrait of the Lion Grave.
Yes. So I think these works of fiction and these traditions, like the tradition about the genii, they show that these beings are very close to us and can have interactions with us. And those interactions can be conscious. And maybe human beings, if they're strong enough with their will, they can master these beings to do good things or bad things. That's what black magic is, I suppose.
Black magic is always bad.
Black magic is bad, yes. But there's also white magic, which is also supposed to work with such beings as these. But you'd better be careful, because they're only helping you because they're afraid of you. And if you lose your control over them, they can also be harmful again.
People like Hitler,
Something like that, yes. Yes. Mother speaks about that the psychic being has gone away. Yes.
So you pronounce it
I pronounced it genii because it's the plural of genius. And he's written it with two I's.
Yeah.
Mm? But we can think that it's the same thing as the jinns.
Yeah.
It's actually the same word in different forms. So shall we stop there for today? Next time we'll read about the kind of mischief that they do.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.